Hi, welcome to the MVC screencast series using ASP.NET MVC with Community Tools. Brandon Satram here, and this is episode 12 on the Should Assertion Library. This and other screencasts from the MVC series are available at bit.ly/MVC screencasts. As I close out this series, I wanted to circle back on testing, specifically unit testing and assertions. We're no doubt all familiar with lines of code that look similar to this. In a unit test, this is the code that tells my test runner to make a pass-fail decision for the test based on the object or objects of my assertion and the condition that I provide. In this case, I'm instructing the test runner to evaluate the string 1 and the number 1 and tell me if they're equal. Most of us are used to this syntax and have become comfortable with it, but it's not really as readable as it could be. The object of each assertion occurs at the end of each statement, and the assertion is more for the test runner than for our benefit as developers. Not only that, but assertions vary in subtle to major ways from one testing framework to the next. It's with all this in mind that the Should Assertion Library was created. Should provides a set of extension methods for test assertions that enable developers to author tests directly against objects under test and in a framework-agnostic way, so your assertions are the same whether you're using InUnit, XUnit, MSTest, or another framework. There are two flavors of Should, the main library and Should Fluent, which allows you to author assertions using a more fluent style. Now let's take a look at using Should and Should Fluent on our MVC application. So as you would expect, we're going to get started by actually installing Should via NuGet. So I type install package should and enter, and it's going to install Should version 1.1 for me. Once I've done that, I'll install Should Fluent. So I can just type install package should fluent. As I mentioned, these are fundamentally from the same project. It's basically just a different dialect that you'll use to write your tests, and it's really more of it's a matter of taste whether you choose one or the other. So once I've got those two installed, I'll talk briefly about what should and should fluent really do. So I'm going to add in a new method here really quick. And you're familiar with this test, something along these lines, and you saw this in the slide just a moment ago. It's testing two values, 1 and 2. The way that you would express this in should would be by choosing the left-hand side of this assertion, which is the expected value, and then making that sort of the first line in the statement. So should and should fluent provide extension methods on objects, on booleans, on strings, integers, and things like that, and you can use those values to start your test. And so I'll say 1.should. In this case, you can see once I type that, I have IntelliSense for all of the different values that I can use for should. Should be empty, should be of type, should be in range, things like that. So in this case, I'll say 1 should equal 2. For should fluent, it's slightly different. So I would, in this case, would say 1 should. And should fluent, I'm always going to hang off. The second call is going to be just a call to should. And then from there, I can say should be equal. Or I can say should equal. Right, so should be allows me to sort of extend the sentence to add additional things to it. So should be convertible to, should be equal to, should be in range, things like that. And we'll use those in a second. In this case, I'm just going to say should equal to. Right, so a very similar looking test. It's just a different dialect. And if I want to chain multiple tests together in a sentence, think about should fluent as really writing complete sentences that express your assertions. And so we're going to go ahead and change this test here. So this is a test against my sessions controller, and specifically against the create method that really just returns a view with a list of possible tags and speakers. So when you create a new session in Faceplant, you can choose a tag and you can also choose a speaker for that session. So I want to make sure that first of all that the view renders properly, that it's not null. I also want to make sure that the reference data that's passed in, the number of tags and speakers, are not null. And then I want to make sure that those have at least one entry in either of those, because those are going to populate my drop-down list. And so the way that I would change this is, as you saw before, I would make the create view the first part of the statement. And since that's object, I can say should not be null. Right? And that's a very simple way that I can just test my is not null against each object. So I do the same thing for tags and speakers. And then for my counts, just to make sure that those are greater than 0, I'm going to do something a little bit more. In this case, what I need to do is specify a range. And so I know the range based on the dummy data that I'm using. So in this case, I'm just going to say tags.count should be in range. in a range of 1 to 10. I know that I have at least one tag, and I may have up to 10 for that test to pass based on what I've added into the dummy database. So same thing for speakers, should be in range 2, and because I know that there's only 2, I'm going to specify just my low and high are just 2. Now that I've done this, I'll run this test, and that test passed. So I was able to take those same assertions and express those in a little bit clearer, cleaner way. Not only easier for me to express those as I'm authoring my test, but also more readable to other developers as they come along. So let's take a look at a different test and change that to actually use should fluent. So in this case, I actually have a create post test here, just to want to make sure that a valid session is actually saved in my database using the create method, and then I use the details method in my or the details action to actually make sure that that session actually does exist in the database. And so I have 2 is not nulls and then an r equal, and the way that I would express these 3 statements using should fluent is I would say details view should not be null. All right, so in this case using should fluent, I'm writing a little bit more of a complete sentence. It can be more verbose to some, but I think the idea is that not only does it allow you to express things a little bit more cleanly, and of course it is a matter of taste, but it also allows you to chain multiple assertions together in a very fluent style. So you can have, you know, perform a few assertions on a single, you know, core object like your details view or save session or something along those lines. And so I have those 2, and then I also want to do an assert equal. So I'll say saved session should equal session. So I'm making sure that the object that I saved in the database is the same that came out. So I've been able to replicate those 3. Let me do a few others, because I can now also use this to add a little bit more, use this Fluent interface to provide a little bit cleaner representation of some other tests. So I'll say saved session ID. So now I'll test some properties on that session. And I'll say should be in range. And my dummy database auto-generates IDs from 1 to 5,000, so I'm just going to make sure that that range there is appropriate for the ID, that ID is being set properly. And then I can also test on other objects. So there's a speaker object actually on my session object. I'm going to query its name property and test that the name that was saved into the database for that speaker object is my name. Now I'll go ahead and run this test. And it passes. So I was able to use should fluent again, replicating the same assertions. I'm not adding any additional or new functionality here, but I am able to author those tests in a specific way. And then at the end, really, your choice about using should or should fluent is really just going to be a more matter of taste and what you're used to. But I highly encourage you to check this library out. That's it for this episode. To learn more about should, check out should.codeplex.com. To install should in your application, get it via the NuGet package installer or type install package should in the package manager console window in Visual Studio. You can also download or fork the source for should at Codeplex. And that's it for this screencast series. Thanks to everyone who has watched and provided feedback over the last several months. I had fun doing these, and I hope you found them useful. And of course, this and other screencasts are always available for on-demand viewing and downloading at bit.ly/mbcscreencast. I hope this has been helpful. If you have comments or questions, feel free to contact me via email, at my blog, or on Twitter. Thanks so much for watching.